Bienvenue à la French Connection. Cette semaine, nous avons un épisode spécial avec deux invités très spéciaux, Nicholas et James from Duo Security. Et ils vont nous parler d'une forme d'authentification web, une nouvelle approche qui va nous sauver du temps, nous sauver des problèmes avec les mots de passe, qui est un standard qui est en train d'approuver. Et Patrick va faire la majorité de l'entrevue et va nous traduire au gré de l'entrevue, ces genres de choses-là.
Donc, aujourd'hui, on est avec Nick et James de Duo et ils vont commencer par expliquer, dans le fond, qu'est-ce que WebAuthn, qui est le nouveau protocole pour les mots de passe passwordless, dans le fond, sans mot de passe, pour l'authentification sur le web. Expliquer un peu l'histoire, vers où ça s'en va, puis pourquoi eux sont impliqués dans ça. So, hi guys, hey Nick, James.
Hello.
Just to start, just explain why are you guys into WebAuthn, what's the story behind this, and just a little introduction about what WebAuthn is and where it's going.
So, WebAuthn started as a standard with the W3C. With the backing of the FIDO Alliance in 2016. The purpose of the standard was to expand upon U2F and UAF, which is Universal Authentication Factor, to allow for browsers to have a set of API endpoints that could respond directly to a variety of authenticators that would allow for the creation of first factor credentials. So replacing passwords with strong public keys. This is something that couldn't be done before, mostly because there wasn't a unanimous agreement among the browsers on how to handle this in a normative way. But as of work in 2017 and 2018, the main browser vendors, Google, Microsoft, and Mozilla, have come together to create a set of endpoints, or basically have JavaScript implementations of a credential API in these browsers to handle creating both U2F and password replacing credentials in a way that would there would be easy to adopt for everyone.
Yeah, and cool. I would just add one more thing to that, which is that some of the like security properties that were present in U2F, which Nick mentioned earlier, which is the universal second factor, such as phishing resistance, are also present in web authentication. And then one of the other most notable differences between, something like another standard like U2F and WebAuthn is that web authentication supports the notion of user verifying authenticators. So that's, Nick alluded to this earlier, saying that, it could be used as like a strong single factor for the purpose of authenticating users to websites. And the way that works in practice, is that you as an end user may have your phone or your laptop that has a trusted platform module or an HSM or something like that, in combination with an authentication factor that proves that you are you. So such as like a biometric, like a facial recognition or biometric or other types of biometric like touch or fingerprint sensors, or in some cases even a PIN. So you're basically in a single gesture, like one step, you know, you log into a website, you touch your fingerprint sensor, and it logs you in using strong public key cryptography.
Oh, I'll just go and try to translate most of it. Donc, qu'est-ce qu'ils viennent d'expliquer, en fait, c'est que la technologie de WebAuthn a été implémentée au début au niveau des protocoles UDEF et UEF dans les browsers, et principalement pour offrir un accès, dans le fond, là, une librairie dans les browsers pour faire de l'authentification d'un premier facteur avec le concept de public key, donc vraiment plus avancé. Un peu comme les concepts d'iMessages et autres, là, où ce que ça s'authentifie dans les deux sens. Ça a commencé dans le coin de 2016, parce que ça pouvait pas se faire vraiment avant, parce que les gros joueurs étaient pas très participatifs. Mais dans le coin de 2016 et 2017, Google, Microsoft, Mozilla ont commencé à implanter dans JavaScript, en fait, l'API pour que les browsers puissent avoir le UTF, le protocole dedans, qui va finalement remplacer les passwords pour que ça soit transparent, passwordless. Et ce que James expliquait à la fin, c'est que, dans le fond, le processus de comment ça va fonctionner pour un utilisateur, c'est que juste en utilisant ce protocole-là, il peut être relié à un concept de premier et deuxième facteur. Donc, le premier étant l'utilisateur avec la biométrie faciale ou autre, ou même un PIN. Et à partir de là, en utilisant, admettons, votre empreinte digitale, ça vous authentifie vous en tant qu'humain, mais vous aussi avec un set de clés publiques privées, va faire la gestion des mots de passe et s'authentifier dans le back-end du serveur web, finalement, en arrière. Ce qui vient résoudre énormément de problématiques là, au niveau de nos mots de passe qui sont très, très, très poches, disons. Nick?
It's available in Firefox.
In Firefox? OK. Donc, pour la prochaine question, en fait, un peu pour savoir comment ça fonctionne au niveau du code, mais aussi la participation là, avec les autres gros joueurs, Google, Microsoft, Mozilla. So guys, how does that technically work? Like behind, I know you just explained like the authentication factor that is could be biometric, the face recognition or else, and then it's a public private keys. But can you go a bit deeper into the explanation of this and just how you interact with Google and Microsoft, Mozilla, those guys? How does that happen?
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and start with that. I'll start with like what an end user will see, and then we'll break it down a little bit. As someone say, want to log into Google.com. If WebAuthn is being used in place of passwords and not only as like a as an addition like a, as a second factor, I would type my username in. Of course, there would be no password field because there's no passwords being used. What will happen behind the scenes is there's a JavaScript API that is supported by the browsers that have support for the web authentication API. When registering, you'll call this JavaScript API to basically request that a credential be created for Google.com. That request will, through direct communication between the browser and the authenticator, which the authenticator could be, for example, built-in or like what's called a platform authenticator that could be, Touch ID on a MacBook Pro that has a secure Enclave processor built-in, or it could be a mobile device that is a separate, separate from the access device. Or it could be a separate, roaming authenticator, a YubiKey or a FATN or another type of U2F token or web authenticator. So basically, the browser is going to handle passing that request for the credential to be created to the authenticator, at which point it will mint a new public key credential, so a public and private key for that specific website, for google.com. And that's important because this is what gives web authentication and U2F their phishing resistance. So as a human, I might not be able to see, the difference between google.com and google.com with a one in place of the L, but computers can see that difference pretty easily. So once the credential has been created, the private key stays on the device and the public key is sent back to the server, in this case, google.com. The next time I go to log in to that website, I am going to send back a request, knowing that, after the user, after I type my username, an identifier that is going to allow the authenticator to either, locate or determine or deterministically create that private key. At that point, a nonce or a challenge is going to be sent to the authenticator, which will be signed with the key that is present only on that authenticator device. And sent back to the server, in this case, google.com. Google will use the public key that it saved during the registration step in its database to verify the signature over that nonce, basically. That's a pretty high-level overview of how it works, but it's a challenge response call.
Yeah, that's cool. Perfect. Yep.
And to go a little bit deeper, though, the way this challenge is sent from the client to the authenticator is using the CTAP2 protocol, which has been worked on by the FIDO Alliance in tandem with the W3C, who's working on web authentication. CTAP was originally a protocol designed specifically for U2F. CTAP2 is meant to extend upon that work and cover web authens differences within that space. So CTAP2 allows for us to check for additional factors like user presence, which was checked for before, but also user verification, which is an idea that's kind of new specific to this. So we can check if a user has actually used a biometric authenticator to verify their identity alongside this.
Awesome. So I'll just go and translate. Donc, qu'est-ce qu'ils nous ont expliqué du côté un peu plus technique de la chose? Dans le fond, quand on va s'authentifier pour aller sur google.com, au début, il va y avoir le champ username qui va vous demander qui vous êtes. Et il n'y aura pas de password. Donc, c'est ça le concept. L'API en arrière, en fait, va créer, faire une demande via le JavaScript pour créer un utilisateur pour obtenir des credentials là, pour faire une requête, admettons, vers Google et .com. Et à partir de là, le browser, lui, va aller avec un authenticator, un endroit pour s'authentifier, une plateforme qui est en fait séparée de l'endroit où ce que on va s'authentifier. Il va faire un concept de clé publique, clé privée. Et ça, ce que ça sert énormément, c'est de se défendre contre tout ce qui est phishing. Donc, google.com qui serait écrit différemment, là, avec au lieu d'avoir un L, si on avait un ou un I, souvent, on peut se faire avoir par ça, mais l'ordinateur, lui, va trouver la différence. Et la clé est associée au nom de domaine, au serveur, etc. Donc, ça permet de refuser ce genre de phishing attempt-là. Donc, il y a un concept de création de clés en arrière, création de credentials. Et la deuxième fois qu'on s'authentifie vers le site web, bien, il y a un ONS qui est créé en arrière, un genre de token qui est, dans le fond, signé par la plateforme d'authentification et envoyé à Google. Google, lui, va prendre la clé publique et valider que le nonce, le token reçu est bien le bon. Donc, à partir de là, on s'assure que l'authentification est de la bonne personne et le bon mot de passe, etc., avec les bons systèmes. Et tout ça a été créé via les protocoles là, qui s'appellent CTAP, version 2, qui est par FIDO Alliance et WC3. Qui permet en fait de valider un peu la présence et la vérification de l'utilisateur et ajouter toutes les features là, au niveau du WebButton. Donc, pour la prochaine question, en fait, un peu pour savoir comment l'interaction se fait avec les autres participants pour créer le WebButton. How do we work to create this kind of new protocols? This seems awesome. It seems big. It seems complicated. You work with Google, Mozilla, the FIDO Alliance, and all those things. What is the process behind this? How much time have you put in this?
Too much.
Like what?
We've been involved since 2017, in December, mm-hmm. James and I wrote the first public working example of the client and server operating with web authentication. And since then, it's been a big push on our end to figure out how to get developers to adopt this, because it is big and it's going to change how people log in with the internet and operate with the internet, and it's going to change everything from how websites are designed to how security is handled and architected for websites. So I think a lot of the focus over the past couple of years has been getting this out the door, and now we're finally out. We're about to be there. March, we're going to, web authentication is going to go from being a W3C proposed recommendation to, or candidate recommendation to W3C recommendation. And with that, there's going to be a big need for developer education and outreach in order to help adoption. And that's something that we are trying to help drive now, because there's not a lot of resources out there that really aim at helping users not only understand the content of WebAuthn and how to implement it, but why it's important and how to add it in a meaningful way to their site.
Is there like documentation and everything in place already, or you still in the work?
There's documentation. There's a 180-page W3C spec. If you want to go read it, you can go. You can go look.
Yeah.
But what we've made the first push. Duo Labs has put out webauthn.guide and a accompanying site that's webauthn.io. WebAuthn.guide hopes to give people a idea of what WebAuthn is capable of and how it operates, while WebAuthn.io will actually show a demo of how it works. On top of that, it's just there's a couple other sites that really go and demo what's going on, but there's not a lot of other sites that do a great job of explaining.
There's nothing like a small API, mostly Stack Overflow website with how to do it, right?
I think the closest that you'll get currently is you know, like the you know, like Nick had mentioned WebAuthn.guide, which is a really, really great resource that was, you know, like Nick and I had input on, but also Subi Raman from Duos, which is one of another engineer has been working on this at Duo, as well as Emily Rosen, have been, you know, they put together this really great resource that introduces web developers who might not be, you know, they're not browser vendors, right? That like this document, the W3C specification, it's, you know, it's really like it talks about some of the steps that a website might need to take in order to support this new spec, but it's really aimed at browser developers, which is it's a pretty small group. So
yeah.
So that's what one of the things that we've really been focusing on is how do we get people to use this?
A regular developer that do a website, right?
Yeah, and that sort of goes back to what Nick was saying about, you know, like we initially, you know, when we were exploring this, you know, the specification, it was still in an editor's draft. We wrote the first, server side, like, you know, libraries that you could use to plug in web authentication support into your website. And we're continuing to iterate on that, and just, you know, like try to get people excited about it. The one, Nick wrote one in Golang, which is what powers webauthn.io. And then I wrote one in Python, called PyWebAuthn, makes it easy for you to add web authentication support to your like Flask or Django application.
Yeah. Right. Is there like a push to have an official authenticator public, like a Google or Duo, something that developers can just call this and doesn't have to use the whole backend to install it? Or
yeah. So there are some efforts within the FIDO Alliance to really increase adoption and work towards certifying client libraries, such that, you know, you as a, you know, as a web developer might be able to find, you know, in any language of your choice, like, oh, here's one from Google or Duo or, you know, whomever, that passes the, you know, conformance tests and is certified by the FIDO Alliance.
Yeah. So there's this idea of FIDO certification. So FIDO 2 is this standard that's been presented by the FIDO Alliance. FIDO 2 encompasses WebAuthn and CTAP. The FIDO Alliance has worked to create the FIDO 2 framework, which encompasses WebAuthn and CTAP 2. So through the FIDO Alliance, vendors or hardware vendors are able to certify their authenticators as able to handle WebAuthn requests. Just today, it was announced that Android operating system 7, version 7 and up, is able to handle FIDO requests, FIDO 2 requests. Google has done this. Yubico has done this. Feitian is doing this. Basically, everyone is getting on board of this FIDO certification in order to prove themselves to are capable of handling WebAuthn requests. But at the same time, you can definitely go out and make your own software-defined authenticators that are totally capable of handling WebAuthn.
Yeah,
it is.
And to that end, we actually another engineer from Duo, Nick Mooney, and actually another one, Jeremy Erickson, wrote a another library, but geared towards creating WebAuthn authenticators. So there's multiple like moving parts in supporting this new this new specification, there's, you know, you have support on the server and then on the client, and then you also need to have an authenticator. We recently open sourced a an Android library that would make it easy for you to create an Android based web authenticator in software.
It's not. We didn't get any FIDO certification for that.
Yeah. No, I was expecting more something like in a web services, not a certification to do this.
Yeah.
But I guess they're playing the game to who's gonna win this protocol, right?
Right. And so I think the closest analogy I can think of that was probably going to be familiar to your listeners is that, look at things like the Wi-Fi alliance or the different alliances that are behind standards like Bluetooth.
Yeah.
You have so it's similar to that, and there are logos that are associated with
you get the standards body. At least they're doing good work there. You pay them $10,000 to tell you that you're doing your job, but okay, good. It's fine.
I think we're getting rid of password, right?
This is the cost. This is the cost. Do you want to pay for it? But at the same time, the people in the FIDO Alliance, they're the same people we meet at the W3C. They're the same people. They're the same, like Microsoft, Google, Mozilla. They're all part of FIDO. They're all part of W3C. They're trying to push this together, forward together. So that's a good sign. When you have all these big names on board.
Donc, pour récapituler un peu en français, puis ça va être vraiment beaucoup plus court que la version anglophone, je m'en excuse. J'ai demandé, c'est ça, combien de temps d'investissement que ça a pris, à quoi ça ressemble le développement de faire tout ça. La première réponse a été énormément de temps, voire trop de temps. Ils sont temps plein sur ça depuis à peu près le 2017. C'est un énorme projet qui, en fait, la plus grosse partie présentement pour eux, c'est d'essayer de rendre la technologie accessible aux utilisateurs, aux développeurs, parce que c'est une technologie qui a beaucoup de pièces qui bougent, mais en même temps, il y a du back-end, il y a du front-end, il y a du browser, il y a l'utilisateur, il y a beaucoup, beaucoup de choses. Donc, c'est pas très facile de faire ça. Donc, leur focus est vraiment d'aller pousser ça à l'utilisateur. Donc, c'est pourquoi qu'eux ont développé des sites web pour de la documentation, des exemples et autres. Et en même temps, ce qui est super, c'est que le W3C présentement, le WebAuthn est en candidate proposal et il va passer en recommendation, excusez. Il va passer en proposal recommendation tout court. Donc, il n'est plus un candidat, mais il devient une recommandation officielle. Et ça veut dire que ça va de l'avant, que les gros joueurs vont aller de l'avant aussi et que le protocole devrait être adapté dans les prochaines années, si tout va bien, pour pousser ça à tous les développeurs. Donc, si vous voulez de l'information, ça va être dans les show notes, mais ils ont créé le webauthn.guide puis le webauthn.io, un qui est pour la documentation, un qui est pour la démo en tant que telle. Puis allez voir ça, c'est vraiment intéressant. Vous allez vraiment comprendre un peu mieux le concept. Mais le problème avec la documentation, c'est que vu que c'est un gros logiciel avec plusieurs parties, c'est que la documentation facile d'utilisation pour un développeur de base, normal, pour intégrer ça dans un site web, est un peu manquante et pas facile à mettre en place. Donc, l'autre chose qui parlait vers la fin, c'est que le fonctionnement de mettre en place le WebAuthn est via l'organisation FIDO, que eux, présentement, au lieu de créer plus un concept de service web, ils vont mettre une certification pour dire que votre code est valide pour faire du WebAuthn Authentication, etc. Et ça devient un concept de beaucoup monétaire, de payer beaucoup d'argent pour aller de ce côté-là, de faire authentifier ton code, puis de t'afficher pour dire tu peux utiliser ça. Sans passer par là, eux ont créé des librairies sur Android qui permettent de faire l'authentification. Donc, vous pouvez aller voir ça dans les show notes. Et si ce qu'ils faisaient comme référence, c'est que l'organisation ressemble en fait un peu à toutes les Wi-Fi Alliance, les Bluetooth et autres, là, en termes d'approbation de nouveaux protocoles, si vous connaissez ça un peu. Donc, ce qui est le fun, c'est que au niveau de leur travail, c'est que dans toutes les dans toutes les organisations avec qui ils travaillent, ben c'est effectivement là un groupe très rapproché qui font du développement browser, qui développe les protocoles et tout. Donc, intéressant, mais qui demande beaucoup de temps. Donc, pour finir, en fait, juste leur demander leur prochaine participation dans des conférences et autres, parce que le protocole va être releasé un peu plus publiquement prochainement. So just to finish, guys, I know you're participating in a few conferences and stuff soon, and I think you did a few recently too. And the protocol is going a bit more official. Do you want to talk to your push about what's next for you guys?
Fucking RSA. We'll be at RSA next.
Good.
We'll be at RSA next week.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll be at RSA next week to discuss how level 2 of WebAuthn looks. So the W3C is not finished with WebAuthn yet. We put out the first version, and starting in March, we're going to start talking about new features. So what there's this idea of WebAuthn with extensions, so including things like geolocation, the false acceptance rate of authenticators. All these could be added as extensions. They're already available, actually, as extensions to WebAuthn. So, if a website or an organization was interested in collecting this information, it could do that when it requests the new credential. But what other things can we add to that? That's what we're going to talk about next week, and then for the rest of the year. And so we'll be at RSA if you want to talk about it. And then Black Hat, you know, all your favorite cons.
So yeah, thanks for your time. That's really appreciated. That's great tech. I hope that this goes further down the line and gets official for sure.
Yeah, if they have it, if anyone has questions, I'm Code Kaiju on Twitter,
and I'm Future Imperfect on Twitter.
Awesome. We'll add those to the show notes. And yeah, we can do a follow-up podcast if you guys are interested in a few months. That would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think things are going to kick off after RSA and the W3C announcement next week. The FIDO Alliance has already fucking jumped the gun and started talking about it, which they really shouldn't have done. But look, it's fine. I'm not a bitter person, but the W3C is going to announce this next week. From there, I think adoption is going to move forward. One of the big things that I've really been looking at is Google is talking about cable support, which is cloud-assisted Bluetooth. So they can handle these WebAuthn requests by basically you try to log into a website and it automatically opens up Bluetooth, pairs to your phone, and then you hit the request and it's done. So once Google pushes this out, it's over. Like they've now completed the credential management flow.
Right. And they're going to reach so many people for sure.
They're going to reach so many people. And this is the thing. And so it's like next week, part of the thing, we're trying to talk, we're going to go talk with Apple. We're going to go see where Apple's going with it. We can't really say much about where they're going because they're Apple. They saw secrets. So
always.
So they, they're going to have something to say. I'm hopefully, because right now we could see their push commits, but that's it. But once it's in support, it's really just a matter of getting people in the door. And right now, Fido has the keys to the car, and that they have, you can only test if your WebAuthn server works using the tools they created. But you could register for them, but fuck them. It's like, it's the money thing, man. It's just like, they want your email, they want your money, they want to sell it. And so it's like, what we're looking at next is we're going to continue adoption. It's like, we want to work on like the new testing tools. And we've been talking with Fido and W3C about like, how can we make tests for this? And we're talking with Google about this too, because Google wants people to implement this, because it won't work. Yeah. Cable won't work unless people use WebAuthn. So we'd be more than happy to talk down the road. Yeah. It's going to be really interesting seeing, especially this year, because, you know, like Google I/O, they're going to talk about this. They're going to say, you know, it's like, if you want your website to have no passwords, you can make it happen. And they're going to hand it off to people. So yeah.
Google did it. They actually talked about, I was at Google I/O last year and they had a session on WebAuthn. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine that, you know, they'll probably have at least two this year. Yeah. So,
And it reached the news and a few websites too recently. So absolutely. It's getting out there for sure.
Cool. Yeah, Kristen Brand, who's a PM for Google, just had this big Wired piece today about WebAuthn and about the FIDO2 support. Mm-hmm. We went and, like, I'm sure Google I/O this year is going to be like, we're going passwordless and you could do it with us, but you need to implement this. So
right.
We can talk about this down the road for sure. Cause this year is the year of, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gonna quickly translate this. Donc au final, leurs prochaines étapes, c'est d'aller dans les grosses conférences, annoncer ça. On parle beaucoup de Google qui vont pousser dans le fond leur système de passwordless. Qui vont mettre ça dans leur conférence de Google, qui vont mettre ça au RSA, ils vont mettre ça partout. Donc, on est vraiment rendu à l'étape de rendre ce protocole-là public. Donc, si vous êtes intéressé à leur parler, ils vont avoir les Twitter dans les show notes. Si vous êtes au RSA, Black Hat, Def Con et autres, ils vont être là aussi. Et ça fait pas mal le tour. Thanks again. That's pretty cool having you guys with us. And I hope we can talk soon again.
Oh, yeah, thank you. It's great to talk.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And I will do the end part. On conclut en plus en français cette fois-ci. On s'en va dans un air où les mots de passe vont s'effacer. Google est un énorme porteur de cette tendance-là. Microsoft aussi a tendance à vouloir parler beaucoup du fait que la disparition des mots de passe. Fait que cette douleur que tout le monde vit à l'heure actuelle avec les mots de passe.
Ouais, c'est vraiment tout le monde.
on vit vraiment dans cette alloce. Dans ce cas-ci, c'est un standard, ce qui est un peu en opposition face à Microsoft qui veut vraiment aller dans son univers à lui, nous ramener dans son univers. Fait que ça, c'est en opposition. Fait que très intéressant de voir que des efforts faits par des entreprises privées, jusqu'à tout récemment, Duo était une entreprise de plus petite envergure. De voir cet intérêt-là par ces entreprises-là, de vouloir s'intéresser à ça, de voir simplifier la vie des gens et de les amener dans le monde du web, d'un point où on va devoir moins avoir à souffrir avec des mots de passe partout et avoir moins des bâches qui se retrouvent dans des publics partout. Puis ça,
on va s'approcher un peu plus du concept de vraiment la sécurité des endpoints, là, des laptops, des ordi, des mobiles. Et non pas de juste voler des bases de données partout qui sont publiques ou avec des mots de passe poche. Faire du phishing partout. Donc, ça bloque le phishing, ça bloque les mots de passe bidons, ça enlève le concept de modifier les mots de passe. Tout se gère dans le background, c'est super cool. Donc, c'est super que ça s'en aille par là, puis en espérant que ça fonctionne.
Effectivement, très belle technologie. Thank you guys for your perception in this podcast, and I wish you will come talk with us again. And c'est la fin de l'épisode. Merci énormément.
Merci. Thanks.